relationship with my colleague, which I'm very grateful to Mrs. Warner for having described much better than if I did, results in my being able to deliver for the state of New York and for the people of our country. And it was for that reason that I felt motivated to offer myself to the people, and that I hope that the people will take the best asset that they have developed in a quarter of a century in the Senate and make that asset work for them. That is the privilege for which I ask you. And knowing New Yorkers as I do, you know how to split your tickets. And in order to find me on the ballot, you will probably have to split your ticket. You will have to find me, and I'm on line 5, the Liberal Party line. Now, I want to make a number of things clear in that connection. I know John Anderson very well. He's a congressman whom I have known over the years. He's a very fine man and has stirred up the country to a discussion of the issues in a very interesting and useful way. But as I am myself a believer of the two-party system, I am unable to support Mr. Anderson, and I have supported Governor Reagan. But I'd like to make it very clear, therefore, that the fact that I'm on the same line with Mr. Anderson, while I do not dislike that at all in terms of my respect for the man, that does not mean that you can't vote for me whether or not you do wish to vote for Mr. Anderson. You can vote for me and then find whatever presidential slot on the ballot you wish. Secondly, and very important, it is very important that if you send me back to the Senate, that I keep the seniority and the committee places which I have, which are of invaluable assistance to the people of this state. And it is the tradition and the history of the Senate that this is preserved whether or not I am elected on the Republican ticket. And in this case, as you know, I would not be. Now, the tradition is a very strong one. You will remember that some 10 years ago, we elected a Conservative Party person, to wit Jim Buckley, to the Senate of the United States. And he was admitted to the Republican conference and given the normal committee places as if he were a Republican. And the Democrats have had for years, and have today, a Harry Byrd of Virginia, who was elected in Virginia as an independent. And when he takes his seat, he becomes a member of the Democratic conference and has all the committee places to which his seniority entitles him. And this will be the same with me. There's no question about that. And so these assets, which induced me to run, become available to the people of my state. Now, one last thing which is critically important. I have a reputation which has not been helpful to me, though it ought to be. I have a reputation for being so busy with the foreign relations of the country that I have not given sufficient attention to the domestic problems, including the domestic problems of my state. Now, nothing could be further from the truth. The fact is that I have given not only devoted attention, but have brought to my state many things which would otherwise not have come here did I not have the position I have and the abilities I have in the Senate of the United States. But that foreign policy idea has haunted me, and naturally, my political opponents would make the most of it. Nor have I been helped by the press or the media. It's so much more attractive to have my picture in the papers with Deng Xiaoping, who runs the People's Republic of China, when he's received by the Foreign Relations Committee of the Senate. He's received by Senator Church of Idaho, who is the chairman, and by me as its ranking member. That's much better picture than a picture from Hoosick Falls, New York, of a new sewage system that's been installed because I got the money from Washington. But I have delivered. And let's give you a few examples and then go on from there. Now, First, for example, I piloted through alone because Buckley had grave doubts as to whether he thought New York City should go into bankruptcy or should try to avoid it. So I piloted through alone the package which saved New York City in 1975. And in 1978, with a valued colleague and friend, Pat Moynihan, I piloted through that package again to save New York City from bankruptcy. And one of the biggest opponent of that package was a senator from Wisconsin named Bill Proxmire. And he's just written a book, which you're at liberty to buy, called Fleecing America. And in that book, he says that were it not for me and Pat Moynihan, these bills would never have gotten through and New York City would have gone down the drain. And in 1975, I might tell you, the situation was so bad that New York State would have gone down the drain too. And one other example. There are a lot of businesses that threaten to move from New York. And we've had a terrible trying to keep them here, as well as to attract new business. When the crunch came, I caused to be organized in New York City the Labor Management Working Group, headed by David Rockefeller of the Chase Bank and Harry Van Osdale of the New York City Labor Council. And together, an enormous number of businesses were kept from moving from New York by the actions of that group, which had some of the most eminent businessmen of New York on it. And I stayed with it, worked with it, followed it in all of the years in which it functioned so effectively. And lastly, also as an instance of what I do on the home front, I believe very seriously that many firms would stay in New York if their managements, which often are out of state, would not take them out of the state for whatever reasons they may have, often because they wish to avoid unionization. And so I have made it a practice to try to get necessary government loans to help many of such firms stay here through having the firm acquired by its workers. And in the last 2 years alone, I've been able to do that and to save 7,500 jobs for New York and to get $65 million for that purpose. There is not a village or a town or a city in this state which has not benefited from the work I've done relative to them, their particular problem, whether it's housing or sewage or water or the arts or taking care of the old or the very young or daycare, with the experience and the clout, that's the way to call it, that I have in the Senate of the United States because of you, because you've given me the seniority and I have the ability to make those things work so effectively for our state. Now, lastly, you know, the real and fundamental issue of our time is survival. And ultimately, and I hope it does happen in this campaign, our people will realize that the issue of survival is the most important issue to them. And the dangers in this world are very real, believe me. The president has already said that if the movement of oil is interfered with in the Persian Gulf, military action by the United States will have to be taken. Now, this is true of both men who are running for president. And it's going to be very necessary to have some cool and highly experienced mind in the Congress of the United States to do two things. One, to see that our preparations are adequate, but not foolhardy or profligate. You know, every general and every admiral now thinks this is the time when he can realize his pet weapon system. And the Constitution says that it's the civilians, to wit, people like myself, the legislators, who are to control the military. And in order to do that, you gotta have some knowledge and intense experience. I might tell you that Elizabeth's husband, Senator Warner of Virginia, is one of the best people we have in the Congress on that very subject. And secondly, diplomacy is going to be a critical thing. After all, we don't want to fight wars to prove our point. We want to be able to prove our point through peaceful means, and it takes a lot of brains to do that, and to use money and the economy very effectively. And lastly, and very importantly, we want restraints on the presidential power to put us in war. And it will interest you to know, I hope, that there was no such restraint before I came along, because I am myself the author of the War Powers Resolution, passed over Nixon's veto in 1974, which for the first time in all of the 200-year history of this country prevents a president from putting us in war by deploying, that is, sending the armed forces of the United States into a hostile war situation. Now, that can't be done in such a way as to put us in war without the concurrence of the Congress. And this is the first time that that proposition has been enshrined in law ever since the foundation of the Republic. And that's a powerful restraint on presidents. And you can know how powerful it is because the president was against it, vetoed it, and we passed it over his veto. And it's considered to be a historic landmark in the history of our country. And so, for all of those reasons, I am a real asset to survival, because I have a high position in the Foreign Relations Committee where it counts. I have used it with good sense and judgment. I have the law on my side. After all, I wrote it and got it passed, and I'll use it to the full. It is not true, as used to be thought, that there is no occasion in which the use of force may be necessary. There are. You couldn't subdue Hitler without the use of force. But it has to be used with great intelligence and very sparingly and with a real understanding of the fact that wherever humanly possible, it's to be avoided. And that's what I will represent in the Senate of the United States. And lastly, we have a big economic problem in this country. And you've got, on the one hand, President Carter, who believes that everything should be done through government. This, after all, is the way in which the Democratic Party has functioned since Franklin D. Roosevelt's day. And you have, on the other hand, Governor Reagan, who believes that everything, or almost everything, has to be done through the private enterprise system. And again, a very balanced point of view is going to be necessary. I believe very deeply that the private enterprise system is both indispensable to freedom and indispensable to solving our problems of the lack of productivity, unsatisfactory and excessive unemployment, and the high cost of living, which can only be reduced in the real sense if we're more productive. Well, I'll agree with everybody that budget cutting and economy and government and keeping a very sharp pencil about what's worth spending and what's not are important, vital, but they're not going to solve your problem. The problem will only be solved by a combination of provident government and a really productive private enterprise system. And that's something I know a great deal about and have worked with. There are three cities in this state, for example, whose economic climate has been completely changed through the idea which I have propagated of labor management committees. And those cities are Jamestown, Elmira, and Buffalo. All of those markets have what the labor people become good labor markets because of the technique of bringing business and labor together in the effort to deal with non-collective bargaining problems. among them such things as absenteeism and alcoholism and drug addiction and the participation by workers in the decision in the workplace to give them, even though they work on the assembly line, some sense of personality and participation in what they do. And I would work very hard to extend that technique through our whole society. It is now embodied in law, a law which I drafted and which is now law of our land. But it's not nearly enough and adequately used and implemented. Now, I won't detain you anymore. You're all standing. Many of you want to have lunch. But I make those points to wrap it up because it represents what I can do as far as the people of our state are concerned, if they wish me to. I've had all the honors that any one man can have. And I've had this job for a very long time. And I could have quit months ago and become a college professor and a practicing lawyer and lived a much easier life. But as my wife, Marion, who is here behind me, will tell you, I couldn't say no. I had to say yes when the challenge was mine as to whether my talents should now be allowed to lie fallow as far as the state and the nation are concerned, or whether at the peak of my powers they should be used for the public good. And so I said yes, and now the rest is up to you as voters. If you want me there, you can have me. And if you don't, you let me know accordingly. Thank you all very much. Now, normally I like to answer a few questions. So if anyone has a burning question and would like to move up toward the front, I'll try to answer. Salter. Gentlemen, let's take, say, four questions, and then nobody will feel left out. The gentleman asks about SALT II. What's my attitude on SALT II? I think that SALT II represents a cap on the strategic arms race. And while the individual details of the treaty, some are good for us, some are bad for us, you know that in a negotiation, you can't have it all your way. And on the whole, because we are behind and we've goofed off in the last 10 years, the cap is critically important. So I voted in committee to send SALT II to the floor. Now, obviously, it cannot be ratified. The votes aren't fair and will have to be negotiated. My own opinion is that we can renegotiate it better if we leave it on the table and tell the Russians we'll renegotiate this rather than if we junk it completely and start from first base. I think that'll save us about 5 years, and therefore I'm for that procedure. What is this? I didn't hear you. What does the term "red blooded American" mean to me? It means a spirited American with a young point of view on the world, optimistic, and a very decent human being with accommodation to all of every religion, every color, and every ethnicity, and with a compassionate heart. That's what the red-blooded American means.
Senator, why have you not supported the rest of your liberal ticket?
One more.
The liberals supported you. Why don't you support the liberals? Yeah. I have a question. Why you didn't die?
What we can do about high interest rates? In my judgment, the high interest rates are attributable to the prospect of inflation. And when you discount inflation, which has been running at 9 to 10%, they're not high interest rates. So what we've got to do is to take the water out of the money. And you can't do it with words or tricks. You can only do it with goods efficiently produced so they can compete. And that is why I place so much emphasis on the productivity and the competitiveness of this country. And that's the way to go. Now the gentleman, I've heard you. The gentleman, I'll repeat your question. The gentleman asked me, this is the third question. The gentleman asked me a question. Why, if the Liberal Party has nominated me, don't I support the others on their ticket, to wit Anderson? And the answer is that when they supported me, there was no Anderson on the scene as far as they were concerned. And it was clear to them, because they have endorsed me on previous occasions, that I, as I always do, will call them as I see them. And that therefore I made no commitments to the Liberal Party to support anybody on their ticket. And when Anderson came along, I made it very clear to them and to Mr. Anderson, who I have already explained, I greatly respect but cannot back for the reasons I've given you. And so nobody was fooled or taken in, and I'm doing exactly what I said I would. All right, this gentleman in the raincoat. It's the last question. What is my position on the hostages? I assume that that would involve a present struggle between Iran and Iraq. There's no question about the fact that Iran has acted as an outlaw nation, and it is completely unconscionable and an unbelievable outrage that after almost a year, our hostages are still held. But I believe that the interests of the United States are making it very unwise for our country to do anything but to do all it can to prevent the dismemberment of Iran. Notwithstanding that they're not our friend, our nation would be very badly served if Iran were cut up between Iraq and the Soviet Union. And therefore, if an element of a deal to release the hostages needs to be the supply of military material to Iran, I will vote to supply it, because I believe it's in the highest interest of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all very much. And thanks so much to... Thanks so much to Elizabeth Taylor Warner for being with us today, and my wife, who is here on my right side. Thank you all very much for coming out.
Ms. Warner, you want us to come over here? Senator, go ahead.
And diverse group of people here today to support and to demonstrate their support for the senator, and I'd like to introduce some of them. To start off, Glenn Gibson, the business representative of Sheet Metal Workers 71, and John Canty, also a business representative of that Sheet Metal Workers Union. Welcome. John, you have a little announcement.
First of all, our business manager was unable to be with us today. He's on his way to Washington. However, the Sheet Metal Workers International Association wholeheartedly endorses Senator Javits for his re-election to the sixth term as a United States Senator. Senator Javits' labor voting record has been excellent, and his knowledge on foreign policy cannot be replaced. Therefore, we are pleased on behalf of the Sheet Metal Workers International Association to present this substantial contribution to our good friend, Senator Javits, for his re-election.
Can't cash it unless we make a picture. Hold on. Yeah, hold on.
Is this for the check
right
again?
They don't notice. They don't take our picture. Okay, gentlemen?
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Very kind of you. Thank you.
There are a number of other people here that I'd like to introduce and start with Ted Damon, the president of the Retirees Chapter, United Auto Workers Local 846. And Frank Buell, who's the president of the Retirees Chapter of United Auto Workers Local 1173. Now I'd like to introduce Patricia Reedy, who is the upstate coordinator for New York State Independent Student Coalition, who I think also has a few words.
Good afternoon. The Independent Student Coalition is a private student lobbying organization which purposes to allow all students the opportunity to choose a private institution if they so choose. Senator Javits, through his 6 terms in the U.S. Senate, has shown us that his object is also to allow students to attend private institutions if they choose. One example that I can give to you that Senator Javits has demonstrated to the students of the New York State was that there was a reauthorization act that was just recently passed. On his first vote, it lost by 1 vote. This vote was very, very crucial to the passage of financial aid that will be given for the next 5 years to all students. On the night that it was going to be voted again, Senator Javits had the opportunity to go to New York City for a campaign fundraiser, in which would benefit his organization, or stay in Washington, D.C. and vote on this act. Senator Javits stayed in Washington, D.C. and voted on this act, which passed, and because of it, students will be able to attend private institutions as well as state institutions and encourage their higher education. Senator Javits, when you're reelected on November 4th, I know the students of New York State and also the private institutions will have a sigh of relief because they will realize that their interests will be the utmost concern in your.
Thank you very much, Tricia. And I would now like to introduce three or four other people who are here representing groups who are supporting the senator. Joe Benbenek, who is legislative chairman and staff representative for the United Steelworkers. Joe?
I say a few words.
Certainly can.
Thank you. Number one, I'd like to apologize for Director Mazuka. He had a prior commitment. He couldn't be here today. But all on behalf of the steelworkers, we certainly re-endorse Senator Javits in the primary. We certainly reaffirmed our endorsement in the general election. On behalf of the steelworkers, well, I might add all the labor movement, when we needed Senator Javits, he was certainly there. And God darn it, we owe him, and we still need him as a U.S. Senator. So, Senator, let me assure you that the United Steelworkers of America and District 4, which encompasses the state of New York, will do everything in our power to get you reelected come Election Day by getting out the vote and having the people at the polls.
Thank you, Joe, very much. Now, Braden McDonald, who is the field representative of Buffalo Regional Office, New York State United Teachers. I'm sorry, Don Becker, president of Kenmore Teachers Association. There's Don. Thank you very much. We have three representatives of the building trades, Buffalo Building Trades Council, Joe Collin, who's the vice president, Jack Keller, and Don Winkle, who's the secretary. I was asked to by George Wessel, who's the president of the Buffalo AFL-CIO Council, to express his regrets that he could not be here. He's in Washington, Senator, but you know how strongly he is supporting you, and he certainly would have been here if he had been in town. Others who could not make it, but who wanted to express their support, are Angelo Malazzo, president of the Western New York Skilled Trades Association, Tom Hobart, the president of the New York State Teachers, and Don Sanders, executive vice president of New York State Teachers. I'm sorry, there's one other, Hank Paley, the president of the Commission for Independent Colleges and Universities. Now, finally, I'd like to introduce Donna Liu, who's the chairman of the Erie County Liberal Party, on whose line you are so proudly running. Donna? Well, Senator, I think I will turn this over to you. I know that we have one more distinguished visitor who's going to join us a little later in the press conference, and I'm sure you can interrupt. You'll let him interrupt you.
I certainly will. Well, Jim, thank you very much. As a political realist myself, I cannot begin to tell you how deeply moved I am by the organization of this Citizens Committee here, spontaneously, in a very, and I mean that word literally, taking up the cudgels for me. And I want to reiterate that we have a very good chance to win this thing. I am certainly electable in a state where I'm as well known as the President of the United States. Our polls show that there is a 95% recognition factor for me in the state of New York. And though I have always run on a big party ticket, and from time to time as well on the Liberal Party ticket, I know the people can find me. We're not unaccustomed to splitting votes in New York. And I believe the recognition factor is the key to my own electability. In addition, it will interest those of you who are here to know that we just had a debate at the Courier Express. And at the end of it, my opponents outlined who they thought ought to be the United States Senator from New York. And they spoke of stature and experience and ability and accomplishment. And really, my reaction was quite spontaneous. I said to the people in closing, you don't have to look, you got it. And this is the essence of the campaign. And I can't begin to describe my depth of thanks to a very old friend, Seymour Knox, who has been with me in campaigns ever since I began to run statewide. And the wonderful thing about having the support of men like Mr. Knox, who was one of the pillars of this community, and of younger men who were in those very footsteps of being leaders of this community, like Jim Wadsworth, is the fact that they have no axe to grind. There isn't a thing in the world I can do for either of them.